The Dode Fox Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Dode Fox Podcast. I'm Ronnie, he's Paul, and after 20 championship games, it's time for a mid-season review. Live from Clarkson Lindsay Street. Join the conversation on our socials. So we're at Dode Fox Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Coming up on this week's episode, January transfer window, club news, Dunfermline preview, loan report, women's team, on this day with the Arab Archive, and we'll look back at the 23-24 season so far. It's all coming up on episode 226 of the Dode Fox Podcast.
Hi, I'm Dave Bowman, and welcome to the Dode Fox Podcast. You better be listening.
So welcome back to the award-winning Dode Fox Podcast with the pre-podcast pooed and empty-bowled Paul McNichol and picturing the audience in the buff, especially Richie Rockefeller, Ronnie Costello. We'll start with some club news, by the way.
What's happened?
United are in line for a £650,000 UEFA windfall, but it has to go on youth development.
Oh, well.
Apparently that's the rules. It's no going in his back hipper, where I think it might end up.
I think I'll end up in his back hipper. Yeah, he being the chairman. I wasn't aware that they were going to get this windfall. I certainly wasn't aware of that rule. But maybe it's a case of the normal amount that Mr. Ogren puts into the youth academy on a yearly basis. Maybe he just won a day that this year and he'll use these funds instead. But I'd be surprised if it doesn't end up over in America somehow, some way.
Players leaving the club. Now, as most people are here just to see the loan report done live, somebody else has joined it. Oh, Flynn Duffy's off.
And that's absolutely fine. The laddie needs games. He's kind of the forgotten man. With United not playing any reserve games as such this season, he must have had about three or four games since August.
He's kind of been kicking his heels and wasting his time.
Like
he was so another end that's just wasted his time for the last 4 months to get out.
And if he does went back, he'll get plenty of time and plenty of minutes up there because he's been there.
What does that mean if he goes back? If you're in charge of making these decisions, and to the shock of, what would you be doing? It's Frieda Wager. It's left with kind of light. Gallagher's out. What are you doing?
Well, you probably need to replace him, unless you're confident in the young lad, Greg Petrie, coming up for the academy, but he's just a bairn. So I think that he probably needs to replace him, getting our experience head in. And I wouldn't just go after players that are just going to enhance the squad. I would rather go after a player that's going to enhance the team. And then in turn, if he takes somebody's place for the team, that enhances the squad.
So in the Ollie Denham thing, he's come up highly rated for Cardiff, played in some high-profile games, no played loads, has a couple of games, gets ragdolled by Brian fucking Graham.
Yes.
And the boy for Spartans. Spartans, clearly not a bad team, as a jambo pal of mine told me yesterday. It's like, get it up, yeah.
Nonsense.
But he's played in the two games, never been seen like you're saying. So what are you doing? Are you bringing another young kid up? Are you trying to get somebody with experience? Where's the balance? Because effectively, they're not coming in to replace, I would have thought, already.
Yeah, personally, I'd probably prefer experience. Unless you're bringing in a wonder kid, which is not going to happen at United at this level that we're at. So I would go with experience. And if it's a short-term thing, then that's fine because we've got short-term goals of trying to get out of this league. So that's what we need.
And to the shock, and this is not even taking the piss, the shock of everyone yesterday, Mark Birigiti joined Kilmarnock on a 7-day emergency loan deal and helped his teammates to maintain 19-10, never again for the wee team.
It was a shock, was it? It was absolutely stunning. I think United, I can't remember the exact time they announced it, but it must have been just before the team lines come out. But yeah, it just come out of nowhere. I saw people saying, can we maybe get extended past a wee bit more than 7 days, maybe 7 years or something? But he's another end. He's just kicking his heels. He's just picking up a wage for doing nothing. And he signed a contract. United offered him a contract. He signed it. He's contributed nothing this season. He contributed less than nothing last season. But I dare say by the time this comes out, he might even be back in the building.
100% record. That his new team.
Yeah, he must have warmed up that number one keeper very, very well because he kept a clean sheet.
It was one of these shocks. I mean, it was great when I seen after about 3 minutes past three yesterday, right enough, when I was checking the actual team, because somebody says, Barber Geetie's just signed for Kilmarnock, and I thought, nah, you're taking the piss.
Yeah.
And there he was, named on the bench, but it's probably the only sighting you'll see him this season. I still didn't expect him to leave in January. I think it'll be amazing if he did. And it's probably been, I think we mentioned this last week, a wee bit detrimental to what could be done for the squad right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, who knows what the guy gets paid. He's entitled to it, because as I said a couple of minutes ago, like, United offered him a contract, he signed it. Everything's above board, but ultimately, whatever we're paying him is just a waste, because he's no contributing. He's no... I don't know what would hate happen for him to get a shout. We'd probably bring in an emergency keeper before turning to him, I would imagine. So, yeah, I think that we're stuck with him until the end of the season. I'd be very surprised if he goes away, unless Derek McInnes is really suffering from a concussion and wants to extend it to the end of the season. But I'd be amazed. I think we're stuck with him for the next 6 months.
Yeah, I think if it was long-term injury, it might have happened, and it would have been what is. But yeah, I don't see much happening. But we finally got a player in the door that's been rumoured for a little bit. And on Monday, it was confirmed the scarf was above the head and David Witherspoon signed to the end of the season.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm fully on board with that as well. I think me and you spoke about it last week, and obviously I mentioned his age, his injury record, and I was just hoping that United weren't going to bring him in on some daft length of contract, even 18 months, 2.5 years or something, and they haven't. They've only brought him into the end of the season, so whether or not it probably suits both parties just now. We could see what he's still got, see if he could avoid injury, and ultimately see if he could help get over the line and get promoted.
Are you accusing United of dishing out long-term contracts to shy players in the past?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I'm accusing them of.
Fair play.
Yeah.
No, I think it'll be a good signing. We mentioned it last week. I think it's really interesting the way he's going to play, because that's been raised a couple of times in random group chats you play. Where is he going to play? I think he'll play as a single 10.
A single 10, as opposed to a double 10. So who's, well, in layman's terms, whose spot is he taking then?
I'm not throwing MD out. I'm not here to pick a team. I'm just telling you where Davey's playing.
You can't play 12 players. You're the manager. What shirt is he getting?
I think he probably, on forum, and this might be a controversial opinion, I would think that he would play as the 10 and I would play Tony Watt up front on forum.
You've binned Louis Malt.
He's been injured.
Yeah. No, but that's fair enough. It's your opinion.
What are you doing? You're going double tens here.
No, I've resigned. I'm not picking this team next week. So they'll have to figure it out themselves. No, I don't know. But I think he would probably, if he was Inverness's best player, wasn't he? He's contributed massively to, they've not had much success, but he's been their best player. He stood it up there. He's obviously got himself back fit. He's got playing games. He's contributing goals and assists, which is a big thing these days. So I think it's a great signing for what it is till the end of the season. And even if he starts on the bench on Saturday coming, that's fine, because you know that he can come on, he can make an impact.
Goal contributions. There's your big buzzword.
Oh, what a lot of nonsense.
Double figures for a lot of players. That's good. You want him for the rumour mill?
I do, yeah. Go for it.
A lot of people say right back's a problem position at the minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If MD's seen the news today. Paul says to me back there, goodness, should we throw that in the rumour mill just to see? If you've not, one of their own's been told to fuck off out the building. So that's what's happened. Nothing on the rumours, actually, because I think I think business might be done depending on, obviously, if Denham is away and whatever, I think a centre half. I didn't see anything else happening.
No.
But for you and your loan report, I still think one or two might end up on that.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. There's plenty of scope for it, isn't there? Because there's guys that are not playing. Brian Mwangi, I'm convinced he's not at Spartans anymore. Craig Moore, he was loaned out for a slightly longer than Birragetti's loan to Kilmarnock. I think he was there for about 2 weeks at Brechin. So these guys are needing games as well. So I would imagine that, to your point, if there's guys still to go out, it could be them that you're speaking about.
Dunfermline up next, who seem to have the same groundsman as Dens.
They've not got a groundsman. He's on Gairdnan leave, bizarrely.
Yeah, what's Dunfermline up next, but they've obviously no played. And another chance, of course, for James McPake to try and win a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, it's not happening, is it? We've just got the Indian sign over him. Hopefully I'm not jinxing it. But we just tormenting that man. And I think when you go on social media, you see fans of other clubs saying, he torments United fans. He doesn't torment me at all. Never. We seem to get the better of him more often than not. So I fully expect that to happen again. There've been close games this year, like the one all the I mean, they were very close to beating us in the first time we played. If it wasn't for your favourite, Matthew Cujo, sticking the ball in the top corner in the last minute, we would have been beat that day. And then it was another Matthew Cujo assist, your mate again, to Chris Mochrie for the winner at East End Park. So hopefully Matthew Cujo starts on Saturday.
I think you tarred me with a really bad brush there, but he done well in the games. I would expect us to obviously win the game for it, but it would have been good to see kind of what they're up to, because obviously that one at Tannadice went up. Arsehole had the header, really good header, but it was one of them, and I know we'll get to it in the review, but we'd kind of had a shitey start. We'd managed to get a game, and then that was a draw, and I was a bit like, oh, this could be, it could be one of these moments that this happens quite a lot, but it's obviously changed a bit by then.
It was also, we saw what we thought we would see all season at the games at Tannadice, where their keeper was taking an absolute age to do anything, fixing his socks, fixing his top, fixing his hair, fixing nothing. It was just a frustrating day. We didn't play great that day. We probably deserved a point, but like ultimately it was quite lucky that we did manage to sneak that point right at the death.
Yeah, so it's Dunfermline up next after this enforced break. It's obviously going to be good for in terms of how the team ended, but were you still a wee bit envious yesterday, just thinking, you bastards?
It's the big weekend in Scottish football, isn't it? Usually when the big teams go in, we used to be the third round, it's the fourth round now with the Scottish Cup, and well, we're basically peering through the windy on the outside looking in. It was fairly stinking, but it's our own fault, and we might get on to that when we go through the season. We were guest in a wee bit, but yeah, it was quite frustrating.
Were you at the country yesterday? Did you watch any games?
I did. Hey, I leave the country because I was watching the wee team. Yeah, well, right laugh after 3 minutes.
The best laugh about it was that late turning on. They were already 2-0 down.
There would have been boys not even in their seats.
Standard practice. Right, we've mentioned the loan report, so we may as well give it to us live, Paul. What's been happening?
Here it goes. Well, if you could fix that microphone hum, that would be bra. Flynn Duffy at Peterhead. Dundee United's forgotten youngster Flynn Duffy would start his second loan spell at Peterhead with an away game at East Fife on Saturday, and he was pitched immediately into the starting lineup. It was a tough but productive afternoon for Flynn as he got the full 90 minutes of what was a hard-fought encounter. Things didn't start too well for his Peterhead side as they were two down at half-time. Into the second half though, and Flynn had a hand in Peterhead pulling a goal back, and then in the 94th minute, his side would get back on level terms with almost the last kick of the match. A good start for Flynn, and he'll be hoping to get plenty more game time between now and the end of the season. Leighton Bisland at Falkirk. Leighton had to make do with a seat on the bench on Saturday as his Falkirk side got pumped to the cup and lost only their second game of the season, down at Bonnie Rigg Rose. Logan Chalmers at Ayr United and Lewis O'Donnell at Kelty. It would be a battle of two of our loanees down at Somerset Park on Saturday as Logan Chalmers' Ayr side hosted Lewis O'Donnell's Kelty Hearts. When I say battle, I mean a fairly comfortable passage into the next round for Ayr. Logan was a constant thorn in the side of Kelty backline, and Lewis never really got going. As a result of that, Ayr ran out 3-0 winners, with Logan being subbed off in injury time, and all Lewis had to show for his afternoon's work was getting his name taken by the referee in the 76th minute. A short-lived cup run for young O'Donnell, but Logan marches on into the next round. The women's team. This week saw yet another departure from the club. This time it was vice-captain Cassie Cowper, and like many before her, she too has wound up at Montrose. But that was a departure. What about the actual score for last weekend? Ronnie told you it was close last week. The team would head through to Broadwood to play the Rangers Women, and as you can all imagine, it didn't go very well. For what seems like the millionth time this season, there was yet another change in goals. Due to an injury to new keeper Ailey Tebbit, Megan Sidey would be given the gloves, and she was just returning from a long-term injury herself. To start with, the game was going great. 17 minutes had been played, and the team are still on level terms. That would all change, though, spectacularly. The Rangers took the lead in 18 minutes, and by the 33rd minute, were 4-0 up. Talk about collapse. It would stay that way until half-time, and I wonder if the manager Graham Hart was considering damage limitation at that point. Well, if he was, it fell on deaf ears. 2 minutes into the second half, and it was 5. I'll spare you all the gory details of the rest of the match, but I can tell you that it would finish 10-0 to that horrible mob in blue.
A bad day for the United ladies, and once again the gulf between the big teams in the league and the smaller teams was abundantly clear. These games all seem a little bit pointless to me. There's no game for the team this week, but they will be back in action next weekend when they host Hamilton at home. That one, Rondo, is a game they must not lose. So in our humble opinion, fan media is really important to football clubs. Whether it be a podcast or a vlog, it's more and more content about the one thing we all love. One thing that's been available for a relatively long period of time is a vlog, or a blog, if you will. And one of our favourites is the excellently titled Madness is Tangerine in Colour. And we've been lucky enough to be mentioned in it a few times, especially back in October, when everyone's favourite rave-loving, leak-scooshing loony, Big G, was leaving us voicemails every week. If you haven't read it, do. It's class. So to talk through the season with us so far, please welcome the man behind that very blog, Scott Bakey.
First off, we just mentioned the blog. Tell us how the blog come about and what's in it, if people haven't read it and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, it's just something that I do every now and again, usually when I can be bothered, as I sort of said early doors. It kind of started pretty much at the same time as you guys actually started as well. I think at the time, I'd kind of, you know, posted on forums and things like that for a long time, or what have you, but I'd always got a wee bit frustrated that there were certain things that nobody ever really seemed to speak about. And there was things that you're kind of seeing in games and that. You're starting to see more and more United games where it was just side to side, side to side, side to side. It was getting duller and duller and that. And it ended up actually, the night before I wrote it, I had a bit of ding-dong on Twitter with Jim Spence. And I basically said to him, when are you actually going to call the manager out on this? I says, because it's all that anybody's speaking about. People are seeing it, it's dull as dishwater, and you never ever ask. And Jim Spence basically says, it's not a journalist's place to actually do that. And I said, well, what is your job then? In other words. And I think it was just pretty much the next day. We weren't playing the next day. And I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to go for it and actually just start writing. And once I started, that was it. And I had no idea how it was actually going to work out, but it got a good response and just kind of went for there, basically.
The blog is absolutely class. There's some choice words in it sometimes. There's people that get thrown under the bus now and again, maybe sporting directors, but it's definitely one that we always look forward to when it comes out. I know that you've got your one. We've had Siggy Jonsson when he done his. There's another one, Timothy van der Meulen, I think on Twitter. He does one as well. It's quite good. And we lap it up. Like any United related content is absolutely fantastic. But to go on to you, what was the first game that you ever went to with United?
I probably can't actually remember the first game, but I mean, my dad tells me he took me to United Celtic game, him and my granddad. It probably must have been about 83. The only thing I know about it is I got into trouble for the police officer for having my legs the wrong side of the front of the terrace. And first one I actually definitely remember going to was played against Dundee. It would have been about March, April, 85. And up until that point, to be honest with you, my dad was actually a Hibs supporter. And he'd kind of, you know, followed Hibs in the 60s, like guys like Joe Baker and that went to play for Torino and what have you. So, And he'd played junior for a lot of years. So he'd basically sort of said, look, he says, I'm not bothered who you support as long as it's no Rangers or Celtic. But then he did say, if you want to learn about football, you know, United is the team to go and see in the 80s. And I'd kind of decided who I was going to support before that point. But once I sort of went up, we played Dundee, we won 4-0. I think Alec Taylor scored, Eamon Bannon scored. That was it. It was just a no-brainer. And it just kind of went from there, basically.
Bit Dundee.
Anybody that beats Dundee in your first game is always going to be good. What was the kind of the first, I mean, we love speaking about like strips and stuff like that, and you're obviously sporting a rather fetching number at the minute. Favourite strips, earliest strip, first you got?
Earliest strip would have been 84-85, which was it was before VG. It was the sort of in between the League winning strip and the VG strip. I absolutely loved it. The badge peeled off on that strip, if I remember. I think that happened, but everybody, all my pals and what have you. Favourite strip, obviously everybody speaks about the VG one, but I always had a soft spot for the one that came the year after, was the Belhaven Beers one. I just thought it's just so smart, and just in terms of a classic kind of Adidas strip. Obviously, this away strip's can't be beaten.
Iconic.
Basically. Yeah.
It's iconic, yeah. First United hero?
First United, Paul Sturrock. Easy one. Yeah. And I met him at one point. It was but after he'd kind of, oh, would have been about sort of 888. And me and my mum and my dad, and my dad just stand speaking to him and that. And my mum's like, Scott, look, come over here. It's Paul Hegarty. And it was just like, you imagine like your absolute idol and your mum comes away like that. He just would die inside, basically, you know. And I couldn't actually say it. I was already kind of speechless. Oh, mum, just can tell me why, you know.
What is your favourite game that you've been to?
It sounds a bit daft, actually, but, you know, that Alkmaar game at home would actually take some being. And I never, ever thought that I'd actually kind of say that because I'd been to some, you know, I was at the Gothenburg final, which, you know, is so memorable for so many reasons, other than the fact that we didn't actually win. You know, 94, I should say 94, but I actually missed the goal in 94. I was standing in the pie queue because we were in the old main stand, so you had to go into the concourse and stand. My cousin was like, he gave up and he says, I'm going to walk back. I says, no, I'll just wait another couple of minutes. And you were standing and I was just getting in front of the queue and I thought, well, I'll go. And then you heard the wee bit of noise built up. And at that point, I thought, oh, fuck this. And I actually ran for the nearest exit. And just as I was getting out, the bar went in. So just, I actually missed the ball going to goal because the whole sort of stairway just filled up with people. And it's like, of course, got back to my seat and Abdi's around us in absolute stitches kind of thing because I was about the only person that had actually missed it. But yeah, that was just fantastic. I'll just actually bury that, certainly. 2010 was amazing as well, you know?
It's always hard to nail this in, dude, but a favourite season? It could be one of many, obviously, but there's always one that stands out for people. Yours would be, well, mine's would be 93, 94. I say it's my first season to get ended up winning a cup, and we thought, we must do this every year. Much did I not know.
Probably 2009, 2010, I would say, you know, and I was actually at Ibrox when we got pumped 7-1 from them. And I mean, we left after when the fifth one went in, I think it was the fifth or the sixth, and actually heard, you know, you're walking out, you heard the roar for the next one, got in the car and the commentary's on, heard that one. And my mate, who'd actually was living down south at the time, he was the one that had persuaded us to go. He's just apologising profusely for actually dragging me there. And to go for that, to actually how the season actually ended up, you know, because I actually remember being on my work's night out when the news actually came through that Craig Levein was going to get the Scotland job, and it's just absolutely devastated. All these people, why are you so upset? It's because he's basically transformed the club kind of thing, you know. We'll never get anybody else like him, and that's the end of it. But then it was just fantastic, you know.
See when Levein did go, and obviously there was that long-winded, Houston wants it, he doesn't want that part, Fenland's in, he's out, Houston then gets it. Can you remember how you felt at that? Like, because obviously the season ends brilliantly, but when that all happens, it is a bit like, well, it's probably the biggest job you could turn down. We've heard the inside track to it, so I'm not surprised he did now. But how that season pans out, we're winning it, but it was a horrible lull there waiting on an actual manager to be appointed.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, the guy Fenland, when you looked at him, you thought, this boy looks as though he's like won a raffle or something like that. He's looking dazed and confused when the Jim Spence ambushed him and things like that. I thought, oh, can't it possibly be this boy kind of thing, you know? But I mean, I think the week after, they played Partick Thistle in the Scottish Cup, which the hand of God and everything like that. I never actually went to that because it was my mate Stag Do. Obviously,
Tell us about the Stag Do. Come on. That's what we're here for.
Well, you actually didn't drink. Stag that doesn't drink. So we'd actually went recording it off the ball in the morning.
That's pretty cool.
Where I'm a teacher, so I teach at Baldragon Academy, and they used every year BBC Scotland used to pick what was called the Sound Town, which was they picked a school and put, you know, installed a radio studio in and did a lot of work with young people in that, actually, in terms of actually showing them DJing and things like that. You'd obviously be into all this, Ronnie. And as part of that, one of the things that they got out of it is they got a recording off the ball. So we were obviously, as teachers, able to get tickets. So I was able to take my mate along with that. So he was thrilled at that. He says, that kind of made my day kind of thing. He says, because you lot are all just about to get pissed, basically, you know. So it was fine. I went to that, played five of sides, and then he actually had a party in his house, believe it or not, and watched that game. But I think they played Hibs the week after, And that was the game, I think, where Houston just said, you know what, I'm just going to do my own thing kind of thing. He played 4-4-2. He played Swanson on one side and Conway on the other, which Craig Levein was always a wee bit reluctant to actually do that. And it was just like a different team. I thought, oh, wait a minute here, this actually, he could be onto something here, you know, because he kind of retained the best bits that Levein had, but actually put his own stamp on it. And, yep. And it was just brilliant from then on.
And it worked. Your highs and lows following United, and we all know there's been many, many of both.
I think the 9-0 would be the lowest point, to be honest with you. That or the St. Johnstone Cup final. The St. Johnstone Cup final was probably worse for me because, I mean, I actually got carried off the bus before the game, which kind of tells its own story. And, like, don't know what happened, just a bit stressed out and just drank for, like, on warp speed kind of thing for about 3 years before the game. And that.
I must introduce you to our pal Martin. Fucking love that.
It's kind of, it's sobered up by the time I climbed up about 4,000 steps to the top tier of the stand at Celtic Park. Like, but no, the 9-0 was the lowest point I've ever seen it. You know, I actually stayed until the end, and I'd been at Alkmaar, I'd been in Holland as well, and that. But it was
a good couple of weeks.
It was, yeah.
Can kind of laugh about it now, but holy shit. Thing is, as well, I'd say this to Paul, because you stayed, didn't you? That sorry, bring on PTSD, by the way. Mm-hmm. But like, I had to stay, like, to the end.
Yeah, it's your job.
And
well, you didn't hate it. Ryan Edwards, didn't he? He buggered up. You could have headed.
And like, but I could have actually just disappeared, because after about the after half time, as soon as the fifth went, I just went, nah.
I'm not announcing any more goals.
Get it round you. You know what I mean? It's 2-0 going to then. But yeah, so that would be a kind of immense low. Highs, Scottish Cup wins.
2010 I thought was brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, just the fact that...
Is that because 94 you missed the goal?
Yeah, I think so. Right. I thought, you know, just going to mark the miss of the day. And as soon as, when the first one actually went in, when he hit it, I actually thought, what the fuck's he hitting it for there for? And it was like, Abdi's turning a clown, you know? But I think as soon as the second one went in, which was just an absolutely brilliant goal, where he kind of actually just beats the boy for pace and that, it was just fantastic, because first time ever United being a cup final, I thought, we've won this year. This is it. You know, we can actually enjoy the next sort of 15, 20 minutes. Just texting every single blue nose that I know, basically, kind of thing, you know? Getting texts back saying, it's a fucking shite game. They've turned it off in the trades house because it's that boring and things like that, you know? Could they give two hoots with this or no?
Get it, Runja, is what it is.
Now, we always ask fan guests, fellow fans, when they come on, if they could pick their United 10 and 6 side from players that you've seen. Have you got into mind?
Yeah, I was thinking about it sort of a week, basically. I mean, originally, the team I had a few of the players from the sort of great sort of 80s team, because I'm old enough to remember these guys actually playing and seeing them in the flesh. But then I'm also old enough to remember these guys playing in the 10 and 6s, and they're absolutely fucking louping, to be honest with you. So, no, I decided, you know what, I'm just going to skim over all the guys, basically. I mean, it's just, you know, you would go for like watching these guys hammering teams on a Saturday, and then, I mean, you can understand it, be like, you watch the 10 and 6s, and like guys like Mark Walters would skin three United players and score. I think, okay, he was a great player, but you get boys like Bobby Glennie and all that scoring against Davy Neary and things like that. I'm thinking, what's going on? And it used to be the case, because it was other than a Sunday, it would be on late at night, that can you get your mum to tape it? And you think, well, watch it in the morning before we go to school, and all your pals and that. And it put a total dampener on your day, because all the D's and that would be there to piss at you in primary school when you went in, you know? So, no, my team would be, I was going to go the Mad Monk in goal, and I can't spell his name, Ronnie. I was going to write it down.
Gregor.
Mad Monk in goal. Eric Pedersen. Andy Robertson. Probably my favourite United player ever, Billy Baggio. Billy McKinley.
Silky.
Danny Swanson. I was split between him and GMS, but I think Swanson had a bit more versatile. And my other United hero actually is Paddy Connolly, who is often overlooked, I think, as a United player, but was an absolutely brilliant player.
Yeah, he was definitely overlooked by a lot of people and managers. Mad Monk, Danny Swanson, Eric Pedersen, Andy Robertson, Billy McKinley, Paddy Connolly. It's 10 and 6s, play whatever position they like in that, but I think it would do all right. I mean, imagine the Mad Monk, five sides.
Nobody scoring against him.
He'd just punch your posse.
You'd bottle them.
You generally would.
You'd bottle them.
Right, thanks very much for that, Scott. Let's look back at the season. I say look back at the season so far like it was years ago, but we'll have a look through it month by month. We'll pick out some of our star men so far. If I remember, we'll play hit-miss or maybe with the signings as well. But a fair amount of players left the club. Jim Goodwin went and brought in Dockery, Grimshaw, Holt on permanent deals, Walton and Denham that we've mentioned join on loan. And we kick things off away to Spartans in the Cup. Nice and easy start, Paul, eh? Nice and easy start.
It was a disaster, an absolute disaster. I was fairly unhappy after it. We argued the next day. Because I thought it was one of the most embarrassing results that we'd ever had, basing that on the fact that Spartans had just been promoted into the leagues. We had just been relegated for the top league, but it was just a bad, bad day. And it done nothing to allay my fears of the previous season and what I'd watched defensively for the team. Like Scott McMahon, who we'll touch on, he's had a good season so far, but that day against Spartans, it was the Scott McMahon for last season that showed up. So it was a dreadful start.
What did you make, Scott, of the kind of coming into that with the signings coming in ahead of that League Cup campaign?
It still kind of felt as though that they were short going into it, definitely, you know. And I mean, we've had so many seasons where it's been the case where United just didn't seem to get enough business actually done. They'd obviously, I mean, they brought Dockery and Grimshaw in, and on paper they sounded like good signings and that, but you were still looking at thinking, yeah, we need another striker. Didn't know anything about Denham who'd came in. You know, his highlights reel looked fantastic when you actually seen it. I was at the game. The main thing I remember is we parked in the Morrisons, and my mate who was meeting at the game, who lives in Kinross, well, I'd actually bumped into his wife. Actually, she was in Morrisons, basically doing shopping. And she says, oh, Ross has just said he's just seen a boy, what's his name? Kai Fotheringham in the petrol station there buying a meal deal on his phone saying, I'm not even in the fucking squad. And I was like, all right, okay, this is a good omen, you know. It started off bad and then got worse. As Paul says, I mean, Scott McMahon, Kieran Freeman, PTSD, basically. Tony Watt didn't look fit. Grimshaw and Dockery, just not slow pedestrian. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I knew within about 5 minutes of watching the boy Denham, thought, he's not got it, like, you know, he's a liability in the air, and they were targeting him every single time. He did actually get a wee bit better in the second half that day, that's what I would say, but nah, we clank right away.
Is anyone else trying to work out what Kai's meal deal is? That's all I can think about. And he seems like he's an egg mayonnaise kind of man. It's the only thing, I know that I wasn't listening, I was thinking, I wonder what the fuck he bought for his meal deal. Does he get crisps or does he get a Mars bar? Does he go coffee or does he go juice? I just can't tell. I generally can't tell. But anyway, Louis Moult then signed on a one-year deal, so it was a striker. When you look at his record and everything, and right away people go, there's a reason he's obviously signing for us. He must be done, whatever. And it was interesting to see how he would do. He made his debut in the next game against Partick. I've already mentioned him. I'm not saying masterclass, but Brian Graham that day made it as awkward for two centre-halves. And again, Oliver Denham, he just struggled.
Yeah, big time. And I mean, there was a wee bit of split that night, actually. Me and you were of a kind of similar opinion, I remember, on Twitter. And actually, I think people that were at the Spartans game kind of like, oh, well, at least it was a wee bit better than the Spartans game. There was a bit more shape about the team. You could sort of see that he'd kind of learn from it. But at the same time, defensively, they were just horrendous, you know. And the fact that Partick had a young lad that was only about 17 that just basically bossed their entire midfield that night was a right sort of worry.
It was dreadful, but it might have been a blessing in disguise, because I think if we had started with two wins, we might not have signed Declan Gallagher. I think the defensive frailties were so apparent for all to see from the first two games, and like Denham, in time he might turn into a good player, but like the small piece of evidence that we saw against Spartans and against Partick Thistle, it told me that he was really going to struggle, because there's a league full of Brian Grahams, and if he was struggling against him, he was going to struggle every week, I thought.
He'd tell him as well that as soon as Ross Graham came on, the first high ball, the punter, Ross Graham absolutely wiped Brian Graham out, and you thought, well, you know, how have we not done that? I think we would have probably won the game if that would have started with him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, it was a poor, poor start to the season. And there was people jumping on Goodwin, because that was then seven games on the bounce that we'd lost.
Yeah, yeah, we didn't. It was getting that way. In the League Cup, you already lost two games. And then we do get a first win against Peterhead. Mole gets a goal. And the man that you really weren't up for signed, Kevin Holt, done the double.
Yeah, I wasn't wanting United to be signing boys like Kevin Holt. Not one bit of me wanted him to be signing, but he did. And yeah, that day that he scored two goals that day, two penalties.
Yeah.
So that was an eye-opener in itself as well, because I didn't realise that he'd be our penalty taker.
Well, Tony Watt missed a penalty in the Spartans
against
game.
Against Spartans, yeah. Yeah, a half-fit Tony Watt. But no, I mean, it was a game that you fully expected United to beat Peterhead at home. But it was, again, it was a bit of a slog. It was two late penalties, I think, in that one. But Kevin Holt, yeah, he'd done his job at the back.
And then Scott, we beat Falkirk 1-0. The meal deal king, Kai Fotheringham, got his goal. Obviously, his first tapping of the season, but it kind of gave a win and a bit of relief, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I never went through that. And in fact, I only saw the second half of it, actually. I watched, kind of caught wee bits on my phone, but I was listening on the radio. I can't remember where it was. The young lad might have had training or something like that. I was coming back for that. And you could sort of hear, actually, on the radio that it was a lot more kind of encouraging in terms of the way they were playing and that kind of thing. But I think until yesterday, we were the last team to beat Falkirk, actually. Yeah, as well. But it was much, much better. And the good thing I think about it was, and Goodwin said it as well, that I mean, the last 20 minutes was like the Alamo. They threw absolutely everything at us and they couldn't break United down and that, which was kind of a wee sign of things to come.
Yeah, like you said, Paul, despite the two shutouts in the games, Declan Gallagher then coming.
Yeah. And again, like if I'm being totally honest, a couple of years ago, I wouldn't have been overly delighted with United trying to sign Declan Gallagher. But I think for where we are right now, I think he's been a very, very good signing for us. He's definitely tightened things up at the back and steadied the ship. And together with the other boy that I wouldn't have signed, Kevin Holt, they've formed a great partnership.
So you're effectively no signing your whole team.
Didn't ask my opinion on signings.
Into August then, the Saints Championship kicked off, a trip to Gayfield on a Friday night in the cold, a shitey pie, but 3 points, four goals, more than made up for it, Paul.
Yeah, I came out the ground that night absolutely buzzing. And I know it was only Arbroath, I know it was the first day of the season, but it just felt like it had been so long since you had seen a United team just blow the opposition away. And now you'll get people that will say, and I'd be one of these people, that we should be doing that to Arbroath, but like there's been other games in the past where we should have done that to opponents and we didn't. Spartans, for example, just a few weeks previous. So it was a really good start to the season. I mean, we could have scored more goals on the night, I suppose. So I was awfully happy after that.
Yeah, it was the right way to start the season. I put a marker down at least to say the serious stuff's really started now, given the disappointment.
Yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, just the first half is, you know, as good as probably we'll see this season, actually. The second half, you're right, actually. I mean, if we'd have scored eight that night, you wouldn't have complained. Scott McMahon, I thought, absolutely superb that game. So was Glenn Middleton as well. And just, you know, Docherty and Sibbald playing together, just, you know, you thought, well, wait a minute here, these two actually look like the mean business kind of thing, you know, the whole team did. And it kind of slayed the myth a wee bit about Arbroath, actually, to be honest with you. I don't think they've ever recovered from that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, they've struggled this year massively.
And then James McPeak celebrated yet another massive draw against United, and it was my favourite player, Matthew Cujo, with the equaliser.
Yeah, we spoke
tidy about it. Finish, wasn't it?
It was a great finish. We spoke about that one earlier. It was a frustrating game. They came to frustrate us, and then the worst thing that could happen was we then go a goal behind. And if you thought they were time wasting before that, when it was nothing's up, the time wasting gets ramped up. And it took until about the 95th minute for Cujo to slam the ball in the top corner and save for Bacon that day.
And the keeper played yesterday for Dundee, actually. Boy, Sharp, he came on as a sub, actually, for Dundee. But I was in hospitality that day, so I had the kind of beer blanket actually watching it. But, I mean, yeah, one of the things about that, and me and Paul were speaking about earlier on, is actually United haven't lost many goals this season. When you look at most of the goals they've lost, apart from whenever we played Morton, every one of them has been a really, really good goal. And that was an absolutely brilliant finish, that goal. And, I mean, United did well to actually get their way back into it, because if that had been last season, you know, we would have lost that game, definitely, you know.
Yeah, they just wouldn't at all.
100%. We got into September, we stretched the unbeaten run to, I think it was six games. Kai's 45-yarder against champions-elect Airdrieonians were a right laugh about that at the time, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. And Airdrie, they get a lot of plaudits because they try to play football the right way, whatever that means. And their keeper has probably got the most touches of the bar out of their whole team. And we got a good start. I can't mind what scored the first goal that day. Rondo was Cujo. It was your mate Cujo. He scored the first goal. And then Kai, obviously, it was frustrating that game though, because United just allowed Airdrie to have as much possession as they wanted, probably safe in the knowledge that, boy, you can knock the bar about how you want, our place, you're no trouble in us. We're quite content just to defend what you're trying to do here. So it wasn't the best watch, but in hindsight, you could look back and think, like, I understand why we played that way. And then, as you said, like Kai scores in about the 94th minute for their keeper making an absolute arse of it on the halfway line and just rolls it into the empty net.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit of a kind of, I don't know what the word, at the time, it was controversial, actually. It certainly was in the stands and that because of the way that we actually played. I mean, I suppose, United supporters, we kind of went through last season where it didn't look like there was any tactics whatsoever for people like Liam Fox and that and Jack Ross. And then at least he actually went in my game plan thinking, well, you know, they're dangerous if you kind of overcommit. And that game as well, it was Liam Grimshaw and Declan Glass played in midfield. You know, so we were short that day. That was when Sybil and Docherty were both injured. And, I mean, there was one point in the game, because the guys around me were going mental, and normally I would be kind of like that as well, but I think it was one point, Tony Watt, for once, actually went to press somebody, and then Declan Glass had kind of ran out as well to kind of cover him, and they basically cut us open in two passes. I mean, literally right through on goal, and you were kind of like, no, there's a reason why we're actually doing what we're doing here kind of thing. But it was just, you know, at least we actually, you know, when we got the winner, the second goal, that we actually come for pressing them and that, because the keeper was coming out. You know, I wouldn't like to see we doing that every game. I don't think we did it so much the last time we played them. I'd like to think if we had Docherty and Sybil and that we'd actually it would be a bit more open and expansive against them. But you only look at the result yesterday, actually showing the beat Wraith the other week as well, that they're dangerous.
On the back of that, Jordan Tilson was signed on loan. He was thrown in for the start against Dunfermline in the Challenge Cup. That was done and dusted by half time, so he couldn't have celebrated that day. Next up, those horrible bastards, Greenock Morton. Shitehouses, every single one of them. A shambles of a goal at concede, and that red card ball.
Game, we took the lead early in that one. I think it was, is it a Louis Moult header? And then, I don't know. I don't know if we maybe thought job done because they're not getting back into this. And in fairness, if we hadn't have had that aberration at the back where somebody should have shouted to somebody else, leave it, keeper's bar, or something like that, Holt doesn't then header it. And then I think it's Gallagher then chests it or heads it back past the keeper. It was a completely self-inflicted wound. And if that doesn't happen, then it's another comfortable 1-0 win. But it did happen. And again, like the team, we just fell foul of the referee that day was not great. The time wasting, which we know is going to happen, but that's on the referee to clamp down on that. And then that's probably, that game itself, I think, has kind of ruined Cujo's season.
Yeah.
Because he was in the team most weeks, if not every week, and he was contributing maybe an assist or a goal, regardless of what you thought. And that sending off just absolutely killed him. He's just never really got back into it. And in fairness, partly due to Kai Fotheringham getting in and seizing that opportunity.
Kai had played the week before against Dunfermline and played really well in the Challenge Cup. And I think between that and Cujo getting suspended, he just never really had a look in. And I think his agent's probably got something to do with that as well. Fulani said be nonsense and that, but that's a different debate. Yeah, allegedly.
The sending off, it's just a nonsense, but it was like the dark arts again, were it the whole game.
The boy at left back for them. I mean, the next time I play, I just hope somebody absolutely splits him in half the first chance they get, to be honest. Between that and his long throws that he's able to tack for his own half and like bomb them into the box, and that's unbelievable.
And then we headed up the A9 the following week, the Chris Mockery late show, and we know a man in this room who celebrated like it was a cup final winner, and you just said you watched that back and just brought back all those memories of a last minute winner, eh? Love it.
Watched that one back just to refresh my memory on it. And like the goal itself, I can remember that clearly, but I was more looking for our mate trying to get past a dozen stewards or so onto the pitch. And he was offering up some free advertisement for the podcast as well, because he had a Dode Fox podcast t-shirt on that day. And he almost made it onto the pitch. And if he did make it onto the pitch,
that's no captured on the TV, so you're lucky that way. But that game itself, we were down to 10 men because Tilson had foolishly got himself sent off in that one.
Molt had went off injured as well.
Molt was injured. Tilson got sent off. But in fairness to Goodwin, he still made changes that were positive. We still kind of went for it. And it wasn't basically a like win or bust, but like he definitely went for it. And to touch on Scott's point a wee bit earlier, that wouldn't have happened last year. We probably would have just sat tight and tried to hold on to what we had, but we kept going, and it was the scrappiest of scrappy goals, but they all count, and it was brilliant for young Mochrie.
We left late against Inverness, Queen's Park, and then come to Tannadice. We're behind after 43 seconds. Had your arse even hit the seat?
Yeah, I remember it very well. I think it was Declan Glass tries to play a wee pass around the corner, gets cut out, they break on with and score.
It was a great goal.
It was a really good goal, yeah. It was a terrible goal to lose, but it was a great goal for their point of view.
The Queen's Park game, actually, I mean, we equalised. It was a good ball for Glass, actually, split the defence open. And I mean, the second half, we played really well the second half that day. It was probably as good as we've actually played this season, to be honest with you.
And that game as well, the Queen's Park, you know, Tony Waugh gets a double, Middleton gets a hat-trick assist, and finally a Scott McMahon goal.
Made your day.
It did make my day. We went on that for ages. But like you're saying, he was starting to show into a bit of form, given how disappointing last season had went for him.
Yeah. Scott McMahon you're referring to. Yeah, he's been excellent this season. It was like the only downside was the very first game of the season. I thought he was quite poor, but this the first game of the season. It could probably happen. It shouldn't happen, but it could probably happen. But from that point on, certainly from the Arbroath game on, Scott McMahon, he's been pretty good this season, yeah, no doubt.
And then we were still top, we're still unbeaten. The biggest challenge might have been getting to Kirkcaldy.
I wasn't there. We were actually going away to go on holiday, so we were listening on Edinburgh Airport, actually had Arab Zone on, and that, yeah.
No, I remember it. It was a shitey day. It was probably Liam Grimshaw's poorest performance of the season. He just couldn't get to grips at all with the guy Easton. I would say he was probably also at fault for the goal that we concede, because there's a ball that comes in, albeit for the other side, but the boy that he's meant to be marking gets a free header, hits the post, and then he doesn't even react to the boy getting the rebound. So yeah, he was quite poor that day, but it was definitely a game of two halves. Wraith, I felt, were the better team first half, and then second half, like, I felt like we were bombarding them. We obviously get the equaliser through Louis Molt, who was on the bench. I think he comes on that day.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
And then towards the end of the game, it was us that were pressing. Like, Middleton's had a few shots. I think one was a free kick, possibly. So probably a draw was a fair result, but we definitely could have nicked that one at the end.
Grimshaw always seems to struggle on Astro for some reason. Mm. You notice his poorest games is always when playing Astro.
The thing with the following week, we go up to Balmore, and we were obviously calling it the Diddy Cup, which was then a real disservice. But we also had a goal that nobody knew was actually in. Middleton's free kick.
Yeah, I remember watching it. I was sat on the couch with Leo, and it just looked like it was a bit of a sclaff that it maybe went round the side of the post, hit the advertisement at the back and rolled along. But and then you see him celebrating, and you're like, oh, Christ, we're 1-0 up here. We'll take that. But yeah, like we did refer to it as the Diddy Cup. I mean, it's a game. If United are playing in a game, you want them to win, but you'd rather not be in that cup, because if you are in that cup, then it means you're in this daft league.
Mm-hmm. We watched it on the bus going to the airport, and then in the airport, and it was just a complete non-event, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And the following week, four words: Kevin Holt, goal machine.
Yeah.
Partick Thistle away.
That was the day that I went through Fife to get to Glasgow because I thought it would be the quicker route. That was Storm Babe Tea that weekend, was it? No, was it? But that's because I spoke to the old man, and I thought, oh, I'm gonna confirm it with my dad, because he always knows the best routes to go and the quickest routes. And I says, I'm thinking of going through Fife because like it's meant to be flooded and there's roadworks. Fife's perfect, son. So that's what we've done. 3 hours later, I got to Glasgow. We missed not a jot. Like, we got there at 2:58 or something, so I was on time. And that was a brilliant day. Apart from the 3 hours, that was a brilliant day.
What a performance that was. And if MD was going to get a goal, I didn't expect to get two or three that day.
No. And, well, he did. I think he said that to Declan Gallagher before the game. But, like, the first half, there wasn't much in it. Like, we were obviously 1-0 up at half time. But when we were watching that one sitting at half time, like I didn't foresee it then turning into the way it did. But once we got that second goal, it felt like Partick absolutely collapsed, and and Kevin Holt just had his way with him.
Goodwin got a bit of stick at half time walking down the tunnel. Me and the young lad were there as well. We got there fine, by the way. We went four for Scoon, Perth, down to Glasgow.
You went a normal route. Of course you did.
But no, United started off really well, and then once again, when they got a goal up, they had their foot off the gas, and it's just felt we're getting frustrated, because there was times that they were getting in good positions and then just turning back and going back to centre halves, and people were getting more and more frustrated about it, and he got a bit of stick at half time, Goodwin. And then it was kind of Holt's goal that kind of changed it, and like that, as soon as that went goal of the season, they just completely collapsed, as you say. But it was a bit of a strange one, that game, actually, that, you know, it was a bit itsy peatsy and quite frustrating. I think that's probably folk going about United Sports having a go at the team, I think actually United Sports actually got a bit of faith in the team, that actually sometimes think we can actually, if we want to go for it, we actually can beat teams pretty comfortably here. And it's sometimes the managers just wants to play with that handbrake on, you know, at times. And that's the frustration.
Well, you mentioned that. The goals obviously kept coming the following week as Dick got dicked, really. 6-0, we pumped him. And it was a rare appearance, Paul, and goal for Ross Docherty. Mind him.
The lesser spotted Ross Docherty. That itself was a great night, a great occasion, because that was the 100th anniversary or the name change. There was a big fan display as well before it, which was absolutely amazing. But if you remember, it was absolutely torrential rain that day, and there was real concerns about whether or not the game was going to be on. But the pitch that night looked absolutely fantastic, and did we no score in about 2 minutes? It got chopped off, and then I think 4 minutes into the game we were 1-0 up, and we just absolutely battered Arbroath that night.
It's a nice wee change that, you know, because there's been previous times, remember St Johnson last season, where it was a sort of big day for the club and the players usually just come out flat as a pancake or get let you down, whereas actually on that, it's like they all knew what they had to do, kind of thing, and they actually put on a show as well, which was good. I mean, display and everything before it, you know, it was fantastic, and that, and actually, you know, the team actually go out and match it was brilliant.
Yeah, we finished the month off with no Halloween scare. We were down at Airdrie. It was a game I was desperate to go to just to avoid going to the door all night. It was never going to be the prettiest of games down there. It was freezing cold as well, but we won 2-0. Kai Fotheringham got another two goals.
One was yet another gift, because that's what Kai was dealing in for a large portion of the season. It was Middleton again, a wee assist. He put it to the back post. The keeper's flapped at, and Kai was on hand. And then the second one, Tony Watts done a wee bit of closing down,
Preston,
which is rare. And he's played in Kai, and he's tucked it away into the top corner. So, yeah, anytime you beat Airdrie, because it's all, like we've said it before, Airdrie do play some nice football. They maybe are a wee bit of toothless up front, but like they've obviously got some results this season, so they can get them. But in the games that we've played against them, I think Goodwin's kind of got it sussed so far.
And then going into November, it would have been when Augustine was over and you treated him to a fudge donut.
Yes, yeah, I did. I'd saw him, he'd been to the Snug, so I'm thinking, right, he's probably tried everything else that Dundee's got to offer. Like, what can I impress upon him here? So a fudge donut it was. What a guy Augustine is. I don't know, did you see his video that he put out just the other
The club done for him. It was nice.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. So he's, like, from speaking to Augustine, the young lad from Argentina, he wants to come back and stay here. Off his head, but absolutely brilliant. And
Loves the snug.
Loves the fudge donuts, clearly. So that's going to be his currency when he's over here. But that was great meeting him. He thoroughly enjoyed his time over here. I think he managed to get to 3 games. He was part of the display team's thing as well for the Arbroath game. And haste him back.
And then Big Dunk was back where he began his career. We had to come for a goal behind to get a draw with Inverness. And the goal machine, Kevin Holt, with a goal. Now, you've touched on when you first started watching, and his name never come up. Big Dunk, what was your memories of him as a player?
Oh, I mean, I thought he was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. You know, I remember watching him on the TV's first game against Aberdeen. But I mean, the season that 92-93, him and Paddy Connolly and like Scott Crabb on one side, Michael O'Neill on the other, I mean, just brilliant to watch, actually. And I mean, I always say to the young lad about kind of how good he actually was and that, because he's probably maybe a bit too young. I remember him even playing in England and that, his tail end, but it wasn't just the size of him, but it was just technically what a good player he was. And I mean, he was absolutely frightening, to be honest with you, you know. And I suppose in a sense, and you know, United maybe almost kind of got the best of him at times, actually, because he always played in this, like, an Everton team that was struggling, basically, and that, you know, you never really seen him in a really good team, to be honest with you, other than his maybe year at Newcastle, where he was injured most of the time anyway, you know. No, but fantastic, absolutely nutter. I do remember the one time I actually seen him personally, and I would have only been about 14 or something. He was in the Mega Bowl in Lochee, and we were in there with the BB going for bowling, and he was playing the shooting game, Mad Dog McCree, and we were all like that. And he's like, he basically shot Abdi Else, and then the Undertaker come and shot him as well. And obviously, that's Duncan Fee, he's just shot the Undertaker. You can't actually do that. And he just sort of turned and glared at me, kind of everyone shiting herself. The young lad actually met him a few last year, because his son plays for Forfar. The young lad goes to watch Forfar with his pals every now and again, and the young lad got his picture taken. And what was quite telling, actually, my proudest moment is my young lad's taller than Big Dunk. And that, so it was like, yeah. But I was like, what was he like with his young lad? The young lad says, oh, he's moaning about him saying he's fucking shite.
Is this the same young lad that got booked on purpose last week so he could be here today?
He got sent off.
On purpose so he could be here today. Fair play. Next time the left back for Morton's about fucking 2 foot right in. The Brideys had barely seen a hot oven, but a half-time lead helped things at East End Park. Mockery again on target with a filthy drop of the shoulder, Paul. And yet again, the Chris Mockery late show.
Yeah, well, that was a good win. It wasn't a great performance, to be honest. It was a bit sluggish, I thought. Kai obviously got the opening goal to a Liam Grimshaw shot that I think Dennis Mehmet should have done better with. And that took me into the second half when Declan Gallagher went for a wee nap in the middle of the pitch, but he just lays down and the boy Moffat. Fair play, it was a decent finish for the guy. And it looked like it was again going to be another draw with Dunfermline, but a wee bit of magic for Matthew Cujo on the left, opening up defences like what he does and laying it on a plate for Mockery to then drop the shoulder and send about three boys the other way to stick it in the top corner. Massive 3 points at that point.
We've also said that, that centre half, the number five, it plays for him. What a wee arsehole he is.
Hamilton, is it?
Oh.
Yeah, he is an arsehole, yeah.
I'll stick him.
I think, I mean, that game, when they equalised, I mean, we were really under the cosh for a wee spell, and there was one point where the boy was clean through and Walton pulls off an absolutely brilliant save. And
yes.
Hopefully, if we win the league this year, which we all hope we will, I think when we look back at it, that was probably one of the most pivotal moments, actually, because we'd have lost that game, I think, if he'd have scored, because we were so, they were so on top of us at that point.
After that, back-to-back cup matches, back-to-back cup exits, and for a lot of fans, and maybe rightfully so for some, felt that the wheels were starting to fall off, Paul.
Yeah, the Falkirk one was first. That was the Diddy Cup, as we've always called it. So you're no heartbroken that you get put out of that cup. However, it was more the manner in which we got put out of that cup, because we had a relatively strong team, albeit we didn't have Declan Gallagher on that night. I can't mind if Ross Doherty was playing, he probably wasn't. But like that was 4-2. Like the two goals that we scored, if you remember, Cujo's, the keeper's made an arse of that, and Tony Watts, the keeper, should have saved that as well. Falkirk could have scored a lot more than four that night. So it was really frustrating that the performance that we had put in, it was maybe the worst performance of the season up to now.
Yeah, definitely, I would say so. I mean, fair play to Falkirk, they two wide players and just flew at us, you know, just kept running.
Ruined with. Yeah. Absolutely ruined with. Morrison.
The bit with Kevin Holt where he just cracks under the pressure kind of thing, which the first time we'd seen that this season, we hit the goal that he gives away and that. No, the United just looked completely overrun that day. I mean, I think Falkirk will come up next season and do a bit of damage in the Championship. I would imagine they'll be competitive at the top end and that. But no, it was a bit of worry actually, the way that they were kind of wilted under pressure.
I think the big one was, obviously we've mentioned that a few times, but obviously in the first season when we were doing this, you went on a wee trip down to the West Coast as we got pumped 4-0 against Queen of the South. And then when I think of this season and we draw Queen of the South, I think that'll never happen again.
Yeah.
And you had the same puss on you at the door that day, didn't you?
Yeah, it was poor, and I know that, again, that was one of the rare occasions when me and you were arguing about it. because you kept throwing at, but we had 127 shots on target and whatever. It didn't feel like that. Like it was weird because we went through the cup and it didn't feel like we were under the cosh at any point in that game, I didn't think. But ultimately, like bit's bit, you're out the cup. So like, I'm hearing people saying, oh, Hibs struggled yesterday up at Forfar. It doesn't matter. Like they won, they beat them, they found a way. Whereas
27 goes at getting my, at about 127 goes at getting my stream to work. It was abroad that day.
Oh, and it was also one of the coldest days. I was sitting beside Makers in the second half, and Nineveh were looking for extra time. We would have cheered on a winner for any of the teams at that point, but it was just so disappointing.
Is that because one of you had a hip flask?
And it wasn't me, I had the car, so...
Via Kinross?
Probably was via Kinross, aye.
Dundee, Dumfries, Kinross in the middle. Unbelievable. But Scott, overall though, it was so... Although we were doing it a disservice, calling it the Diddy Cup, you obviously didn't want to go out. I honestly gave you the best when Paul done the good, bad and ugly that week. It was the best thing because he said, the Diddy Cup is now for the Diddy teams as he moved on. So, but overall, despite the two competitions going out of them within a week, so disappointing, wasn't it?
Yeah, oh, sorry. Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Diddy Cup's the only cup I've ever actually had my hands on. Believe it or not, when United beat St Mirren, I actually got my picture taken with it. But no, it's the Scottish Cup. It's just such a sweetener because part of it, especially when you're in the Championship, is you actually want to actually draw a Premier League team to kind of see, okay, it gives you an idea of where you're actually at. I remember when obviously Robbie Nielsen brought in a sort of raft of sign-ins and we played St Mirren a few weeks after and went in. I mean, it was 2-1, but shoot, it was 2-1 in about 5 or 6. Went in, absolutely smashed them. And you thought, oh, this is more like, this is actually where this team's at and they're actually a good side kind of thing. And it's just frustrating not actually getting that chance to actually sort of test yourself properly, especially if the worst case scenario happened, you're in the playoffs and that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of them that it's not a distraction or whatever, but as soon as you've seen that Jim Goodwin was taking a really serious bit playing pretty much full strength teams that thought, well, if we're in it, we may as well win it, was obviously the mantra, but they were two really disappointing things, and it left just the league to concentrate on. A lot of fans were going to head to Morton. Nobody really needs to head to Greenock for any other reason. That got postponed, so that's going to be replayed this year. But Ayr were next, heading to Tannadice, and another screamer for 6 yards for Kai Fothernum.
It depends your definition of the word screamer. It was a gift. For the keeper, I think it was a corner, and again, it was another stuffy game. We weren't playing great that whole game, and I would suggest that if the keeper doesn't lay it on a plate for Kai, the keeper made an absolute arse of it, but Kai was on hand to take full advantage of that and give with a 1-0 win that day.
It was like a one-legged Ross Docherty playing that day, basically. I think he didn't look fit at all.
Yeah.
And you'd said about him actually the week before against Queen of the South, actually. And I think he played a part in actually one of the goals we lost. He gave the ball away.
Yes. Yeah.
And that. But no, it was, I suppose it was the best thing about it is we won the game and that was it. You moved on, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we would, the top two would go head to head on a Friday night under the lights, over 10,000 at Tannadice. We've seen this movie before. And it was our first defeat of the league campaign.
Aye, I mean, my dad actually texted me. He was watching it abroad on a stream, and says United are completely dominating this game. And I was like, well, I didn't really think that at the game, but I didn't think it was anything that. But I didn't care what he said to them at half time. But my God, I mean, they just came out completely half asleep. And we should have been about 3-0 down before they actually scored. And just couldn't get back. I mean, I think Glenn Middleton missed a chance right at the end, actually, on my right side of the header, actually. But no, I mean, I think they definitely deserved to actually win that day.
The thing with that game as well is obviously people had seen how Wraith were playing, how they were winning games and getting a lot of plaudits for it. That first 45 minutes, they were not interested in playing football. Like, that was we had to really get at them and we just couldn't, we just couldn't do it.
I mean, I've watched quite a few Wraith games actually recently and they can be got at, definitely. I mean, the Queen's Park game the other week, I mean, Queen's Park deserve to actually beat them, to be honest. They are vulnerable. The only team that hasn't actually really laid a glove on them this season's us, which is pretty concerning, to be honest with you. And I hope the next time actually we get them that we will. I mean, I'm convinced that if we get Docherty and Sybil back and actually playing, having Witherspoon as well, that we'll have enough to actually to take them in that, you know, because they're missing Stanton. And I mean, the pass that he plays through for Easton's goal, I know that obviously Easton gets the plaudits because it was such a great goal, but I mean, the pass is an absolute worldie for Sam Stanton. I think he's out virtually for the rest of the season, and he will be a miss for them. And that, because they seem to have the boy Byrne, who, you know, I just wish Callum Butcher would come back and fucking mill him again, you know. But he looks a bit more exposed now, actually, without Stanton beside him, and that, because he's a fucking diddy, basically, let's be honest. Okay?
But it's true.
Yeah. It was disappointing. But it was all right, though, because they won the league that day. If you heard that, walking out of Tad Ice, they had won the league. I mean, I've been to games where Rangers have won league titles, Celtic have won league titles, and there was more noise for them that at the end of that than actually you heard for either of them.
Yeah, I think I said this to Paul. I can't remember if I said it on the episode of that when we were recording it, but obviously after the game, it's about 20-odd minutes or something till we leave, and like you couldn't believe it. But then when you actually, you thought, maybe because of this month we've just been through, the cup exits, you didn't care what was going to happen, you know. And then obviously we got a chance to pick ourselves up again by playing the bottom of the league team at Hampden. And again, we found ourselves a draw, 5 points behind those six-fingered fivers.
I mean, it was the classic good day spoiled by the football, to be honest with you. I mean, I had my sort of end of term from work, finished at 12 o'clock. I didn't go out, actually, because I'd went out the week before after the Wraith game. Went out with a face like thunder kind of thing, Gallery 48. But me and the young lad, I promised young lad, come on, we'll go through Hampden and that. You know, it's obviously, you hate to go and see a Queen's Park playing at Hampden just because it's bizarre kind of thing, you know. Went out, went for our tea and everything like that, you know, went to the Queen's Park Clubby, which was dead nice, well organised, had a boy singing. I met Paul Payton when we were there, he was doing hospitality for Queen's Park, and everything was perfect until the game started, basically. The main thing about that was the boy wiping Cujo out after about 5 minutes, the left back, and United never put the ball anywhere near him the rest of the game, and it was like he was a red card waiting to happen. I said, what on earth are you thinking about, you know?
Still, we've went on about referees constantly, but like even that decision, it was like Cujo was too honest by getting up and wanting to keep playing football.
Yeah, totally. And Cujo, he put a few good balls through, but he never really made any impression on the game after that, to be honest with you. And I think the biggest indicator of that day was there was a big United support through there. Obviously, there was a lot of kids, and a lot of kids I teach at school, and obviously went through his last day term and that, and there was virtually no noise, the United support, throughout the game, which was kind of telling, actually, that it just, sometimes the team need to do something to actually lift the support, and it was just nothing there, you know? It was frustrating. I mean, obviously, Louis Malt missed his chance near the end and that, which he should have buried in that, but yeah, it was kind of one of them, you think. I mean, Jim Goodwin got a lot of stick at the end of the game. I didn't actually think that was fair, to be honest with you, because I do think his kind of hands have been tied a wee bit with losing Doherty and what have you, because there's no doubt when they get that 11 on the park, you know, they're far better than anybody else in the league, and hopefully now he's starting to kind of address it, and yep. That, you know.
And the final match of 2023 saw the birth of the chicken dance and a lesser-spotted Tony Watt goal. 2-3 goals out in a place. And ahead of the match, Scottish Cup winner McGarrigle Gomez, obviously you're saying about 2010, yeah. He come on with the match ball.
Yes, and I actually wasn't there because I was at a 50th birthday party, but basically, you know, he was the quintessential ignorant bastard by just sitting watching it on my phone the entire birthday party. United were played well that night. You could sort of tell within about 5 minutes, the wife is like, well, you're looking awfully happy. So this is like night and day for the last couple of weeks. They're actually up for it. Ken, the one time I'm not there and they're actually playing well, you know. It's interesting because I know that you guys spoke about this, that at that game, the second half, that support in the ground were getting pretty anxious and that, and they got a bit of stick. Whereas obviously the difference between watching it on the telly, because I know you said that about the Queen's Park game, that actually you were watching it much like the same sort of situation as I was, and didn't feel quite as bad about things as what I did. I mean, I was sitting watching and thinking, I think we're doing fine here, you know, we're going to win this and that. Whereas in the ground, apparently, we were going off their head basically screaming.
You didn't enjoy watching it like that as well, because you watched it all the way, you watched it back some of the game, and you were just, it's so frustrating. We've spoken about this, like the difference when you're there to when you watch it is mental. But it was the going for the to bounce back and win 3-0. We then decided, new year, let's head back to Arbroath for Mearshite Pez.
Yep.
Now, you couldn't see the game because you were behind a big pillar,
yeah.
But it was back to back 3-0 wins.
It was, yeah. And again, it was served. I think we saw the worst dive in the history of football in the first half, the big lump up front for Arbroath trying to win a penalty. But again, it was Arbroath made us work for it, but it was fairly comfortable. And again, I would say it's a game that you should be winning, especially if you've got aspirations of winning a title.
It's probably the best Arbroath have played out of three games actually against us, and considering they didn't have a team at all, because they weren't even sure if it was going to be on at one point. And whether the keeper was going to be playing up front again. Thankfully, he wasn't, you know. But I mean, I kind of wonder if maybe Barraghetti was going to play up front for Killie yesterday or something like that. Maybe that's what they were thinking, they could get something out of him that way, you know.
And then we witnessed the big dumpling Dodo Oakley scoring a hat trick. Defence, though, were poor as well, and we've discussed it for at length on that episode. But the refereeing that day, Scott, was questionable at best.
I think he was actually refereeing my young lad's game last week. You know that? The same boy. Honestly, I'll tell you, because he must have booked about 15 boys in his game, sent him off, and it was mistaken identity for him. He booked my young lad because my young lad says, after... he'd wiped one of the other players, my young lad's teammate. My young lad says, oh, come on, that's a yellow. Come on, you've got to book him. So he booked my young lad. Then somebody else shouted, check the referee, he's about fucking 12. Thought it was my young lad and sent him off. It was very similar to the ref actually in that Morton game. But I mean, at the Morton game, just so frustrating. This is the shitehousing basically. And I was at the foundation Q&A with Jim Goodwin, and I wish I'd got a bottled out asking, saying, you know, the next time I play Morton, are you actually going to do something about the shitehousing tactics? Because you've just been sucked into it every single, you know, both times I've played them this season. And the big lad Oakley, who I didn't even actually think would have been playing if, playing. But I mean, the amount of times that Holt and Graham always annoys me actually when you see centre halves, rather than actually just going and attacking the bar, want to get in a wrestling match with a defender. And you were never going to win a wrestling match against him because, I mean, Chris, he's built like Fleming, and I'm trying to think now, actually, he's massive, put it that way, can I believe? Yeah,
it was, I mean, we went over and over it, you know, boys scored perfect hat tricks, and when Robbie Muir is playing ahead of you, there's someone wrong there as well. But it was always going to be important to try and round off, know that we had this enforced break this week, and last minute winners against Inverness, Paul, seem to be the way this season.
It was maybe the worst game of football I've ever seen. It was dreadful, but we won. So you kind of take it, but it was a poor, poor game of football. I thought we were stinking first half. I thought we were slightly less stinking second half, but none of that matters a jot when you've got Tony Watt popping up 3 minutes for the end to put the ball in the net.
I think the thing is, I mean, I done it, you know, he gets a lot of stick, Jordan Tilson, and there's been games, actually, the Partick Thistle game, the Arbroath game, where he really did a good job and actually did well. But in terms of actually how United actually want to play, you know, it means everything has to go through Craig Sybald when he's playing, because you see the Morton game when they try to build through him and he gives the ball away, and two, you know, 10 seconds later, we've lost a goal. And it's, you know, they desperately need Ross Docherty back. Personally, I would have actually signed another midfielder, to be honest with you, you know. Or actually, you know, clearly doesn't have fancied the lad Craig Moore, who, if I remember, I mean, 3 years ago when he played against Rangers, and I remember actually half time absolutely raving him, he's the best player on the park. He's 16 years old and that. But yeah, I still think if we get Docherty back and keep him fit along with the guys that we've got, it makes such a difference to us, because suddenly guys like Gallagher and Holt have actually got two players both looking for the ball to come off them and that, instead of one and that, and it gives them so many options actually, both, you know, going forward and actually, you know, defensively, because the two of them actually work so well together, protect the team and that, you know. So fingers crossed that actually that's Docherty back, and it'll make a huge difference, I think.
How do you rate the season up to this point so far?
I mean, the last blog I did, and you know, my mates are the ones that are always badgering me, actually, go and do another and go and do another. I can't be bothered and that. And I think the first line I wrote was, you know, well, somebody spoke to us about a week before I'd wrote it and said, what do you think about United? And it's like, they're doing all right, you know. It's no brilliant, but it's no terrible either, you know. And it's kind of like, for the most part, when he's got his best 11 in the park, it's kind of round pegs and round holes, and, you know, we're day enough to win games and that. But it's not the most exciting. And I kind of thought at the time, I thought, how do I actually put that into 1,500 words? It's a pretty fucking boring 1,500 words, to be honest with you. And that's kind of why it's a lot easier to write blogs when you've got something to rant and rave about, you know, or you've got something like being in Holland or something, you could speak about all that kind of stuff, you know. So I think we're doing okay. I'm surprised that Wraith have stuck with us the way that they have, and I'm kind of surprised the way that the wheels kind of came off for us a wee bit. But I do think that he's kind of seen what the problems are, and hopefully he's actually addressed them and that. So I think, well, you know, the good thing is Wraith have obviously hit a sticky patch as well, which I think for a while none of us actually thought was going to happen, to be honest with you, you know. And I think the telling thing is, I mean, other than the Morton games, as I said earlier on, the goals we've lost have actually all been really good goals, which suggests that we're actually quite difficult to play against and difficult to score against and that, you know.
How have you rated sort of the signings kind of so far in terms of who's and who's stood out overall in the team?
Goalkeeper, I mean, compared with last season, brilliant, you know. I think there is times that he could actually speed things up a wee bit. He's a wee bit guilty of that and just continually wanting to play out in that. And sometimes you think you need to be a wee bit more direct. Grimshaw, I actually quite like Grimshaw, actually. And I think, you know, he gets a bit of stick unfairly in that. He is kind of playing out of position. There is times where he actually comes into the middle of the park and makes an extra man and actually kind of, he will actually work and actually try and make things happen. And that, especially when there's been games when Tilson and that, we've looked a wee bit flat. Obviously, Docherty, when he's fit, you know, and actually plays at Tannadice, I mean, he's the best player on the team, in my opinion, you know, and just transforms the way we play. Louis Moll, I mean, obviously, in preparation for this, watched a lot of goals. I mean, the first sort of 2 or 3 months of the season, Moll was absolutely superb, and he has kind of gone off the boil a bit. I mean, I must admit, the Partick away game, I thought he was poor that day. That was probably the first game that, rather than playing Tony Watt as a 10, he actually pushed Watt up front. And well, Moult hasn't really been the same player since then, which is I'm kind of hoping that if Witherspoon comes back in, maybe that's to try and get a wee bit more out of him. I don't know what it is, but he can obviously take a goal and that, you know. It's just confidence for him. Denham, see you later. Off you pop, basically. So I think generally being happy enough with the signs. Tilson, as I say, I feel a wee bit sorry from the stick that he actually gets in that, but he is limited in that, and he is a bit of a headless chicken at times, but as he has got better actually in some games in that.
I think you've seen it against Inverness. He done his job.
Yeah.
Like it's no pretty at times.
No.
It's effective.
That was probably his best game actually for United, to be honest. And the fact he actually was playing through the pain barrier and that as well says a wee bit about him, actually. Gallagher, there's times that I thought the Queen's Park game, Gallagher was just slowing me down. It was just, you know, it's just pass. But, I mean, you didn't half notice the difference defensively when he's not there. And, you know, the games, to be fair to Ross Graham, because, I mean, Goodwin said that after the Morton game, that he says, I got tore into the two of them about the way they played. And they actually did man up. They both played really well. But, I mean, yeah. I think Gallagher and Holt definitely, you know, been excellent and that. And Holt, just in terms of his sort of character and leadership and that kind of thing, you know, there have been really good signs. The right sort of signings for actually the league that we're in, definitely.
Who's been your kind of star performance or performers overall? Not asking just for one name. Who's a Craig, two or three?
Craig Sibbald.
Sibbald.
Yeah. What a player. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, a massive miss up at Inverness, you know, and that's why we had to go to that sort of turgid at times. And what I liked about it, and we said it, like Jim Goodwin was quite honest at the end of the game, went, yeah, it's pretty shite, was it really? But again, the 3 points was all that mattered. But Craig Sibbald, I think, is leading our man of the match sort of awards so far as well.
No doubt. And there's games where, like, when you watch back the highlights and you see the impact that, like, a Middleton made in certain games, and Kai Fotheringham in other games with his goals and his goal contributions. But Sibbald just seems to be the one constant. You almost take it for granted that you're going to get like a 7, 8 out of 10 for him this week.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, just the sort of qualities that you actually want to see in a player, basically, you know. And I mean, I felt so sorry for him last season because, I mean, at times in midfield, it was like he was fighting a one-man battle in midfield because you had people like, you know, Levitt and just wasn't really up for it, and Jim just should have been fucking on the moon or something. I don't know, it's just absolutely mince. He's the fact that he kind of stuck around, and I mean, he could have been one that, I suppose, a bit like McMahon at the start, has had the old PTSD kind of thing about the whole thing, but no, he's got the right character in that, you know, brilliant. He's the sort of signing that boys like Craig Levein used to make. I think boys that were hungry and actually had something to prove and that, you know, maybe potential that had kind of just not quite been fulfilled in that, you know. So now hopefully he's here for years to come.
What or who is still needed? Now, I'm not looking for names, but what was still needed in this transfer window?
As Paul said earlier on, probably another centre half, I think, definitely. It's going to be a difficult one because you don't really want to sign somebody just to sit on the bench. You know, if that's the case, would have been a spell keeping the laddie that we actually had. But I think the centre half, as I say, I would have liked to have actually seen me get another midfielder in. You know, that would have been my other sort of choice and that as well. Be interested to see what happens with Matthew Cujo and that as well. You know, he's not gone yet. It might be just that he goes on the last day, which is no ideal. You don't want that because you want to actually kind of know so you can get somebody else in. Because I do still think we could probably, you know, if he went, we'd need to get another wide player in. What I wouldn't have liked to see is David Witherspoon get stuck out on the right-hand side because he's 34, you know, and maybe could have done that 10 years ago. But, you know, you want him actually in the middle and that kind of thing, you know. So that would be my only kind of wee concern. But yeah, centre-half, centre-midfielder probably.
What would be your Martin Gordon moment of the season so far? And I'll explain that for you. Basically, what moment has made you jump a wall, get on the pitch, get chased by stewards, and just been like, fuck yes?
Kevin Holt's goal against Partick, I think. It was just such an absolute screamer, basically, you know, that, and the fact that he gave it the biggie in front of their support and everything like that, and it was just fantastic, definitely. I think when he got his hat trick as well, did he get a hat trick there? He got his hat trick as well. That was brilliant as well. But no, his screamer was just like brought the hoost in basically in the way end.
And we need your prediction. How will the season pan out?
We're going to win the league. We definitely are. I think the next Wraith game, we'll take them this time. Definitely. We'll definitely do it this time. Yeah, we'll win the league. I think it'll still go on for a while, but we'll definitely do it. Yeah.
Right, our final bit of business of the actual podcast recording is, of course, on this day, in association with the Arab Archive, preserving the history of Dundee United Football Club since 2006. 22nd of January, the focus, two games. Now, prior to a Scottish Cup rehearsal against St Mirren in 1983, United had only picked up 1 point in the last three matches, dropped 5 points by league leader Celtic. We were out without Bannon. United also ruled out Paul Sturrock, and John Clark came into the team. Derek Starr, Billy Kirkwood, Ralph Milne and Morris Malpass always came in. Billy Kirkwood brilliantly lifted the ball over Billy Thompson to put us ahead after 10 minutes. Davey Dodds then side-footed the Kirkwood cutback past Thompson in the 17th minute, and within a minute United grabbed a third and Davey Dodds once more. The Buddies did hit back twice, but United held on and we got back to winning ways. To 2002, an injury sustained in Saturday's victory over Dundee, standard 1910, never again, la 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 la. Ruled out Mark Wilson and Jim Hamlin for the encounter against St Johnstone. The replacing the two in the starting lineup were Davey Hanna, or the lesser spotted Alan Fisher, and replaced them in there were one of Paul's favourite ex-players, Stephen Thompson, was back in the team. Now, Derek Lilly started the game, brightly, it says here, and he should have put his head after 22 minutes, but he made amends 7 minutes later, a wonderful goal. Now, if you watch us back in the Arab Archive, I'm no making up, it's an absolute peach. McIntyre, Thompson combined, Lilly went in a solo run, and he fires us ahead. We then went 2-0 up in 37 minutes, and then Charlie Miller side-footed in for 12 yards, and then it got better. Derek Lilly, on a loose ball, fires the ball in the back of the net, underneath the body of the keeper. He then he grabbed a hat-trick. I'll just say that again. Derek Lilly got a hat-trick. A masterclass, Paul. And you didn't like him.
I never said I didn't like Derek Lilly.
You said he was shite.
No, I said Stephen Thompson's an arsehole. I didn't say anything about Derek Lilly.
But anyway, we beat the Farmers 4-1, and that's how it matters. For everyone in attendance here at Clark's, do get ready for a half-time drink. Thank you very much. You'll get a bit of a stretch of the legs, a shake of the snake before we do the raffle. You can still buy your tickets, by the way. You can still do your Q&As as well. Callum Morris will be joining us in the second half. For those listening to the episode, James McPake will be hoping to win another match 1-1 next weekend. How do you think we'll get on? We're at Dode Fox Podcast on social media. Check out the website, dodefoxpodcast.com. Have a great week. Stay safe. And as always, don't forget to wash your hands and your arsehole.